Today's interview is with Carly Finlay, and oh, the irony. I have literally tried to record this intro about 300 times, maybe a slight exaggeration, but I've recorded it a lot because I wanted to get it right. And it's so funny because that's what a lot of our conversation comes back to. I chose to get Carly on the show because she's a disability activist and she's led a really interesting life. And instead of getting an insight, usually when I interview people, I end up with insights into my own life, but I really wanted an insight into her life. And I wanted to open up a dialogue and understand, you know, correct terminology and just get an insight into what life is like for Carly. And the interesting thing is, we all struggle with the same stuff, right? And the one thing that both of us have been struggling with is needing to get it right, needing not to say the wrong thing, wanting not to offend other people. And I just found it super interesting. So I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. As usual, if you're digging the conversation, please hit subscribe because that's what this podcast is all about. Really super inspiring conversations. And I have some really great content coming up for you in the next year. So let's dive in. Let me introduce you to Carly Finlay. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
With a skin condition called ichthyosis. And for years, I just wanted to be like everyone else. I didn't want to have this appearance. I didn't want to be red. I didn't want to be sore. And then as I got writing, so in my late 20s, you know, I started my blog and I started writing for the mainstream media. And then I realized that the thing that set me apart was the thing that, you know, gave me an advantage. So I've turned this situation around to, I guess, use it to my advantage to tell my story in my own words. So yeah, the writing allowed me to, you know, make an entrance into the mainstream media and tell my story in my own words. And the thing that I wanted to be rid of, I guess, you know, is the thing now that's, you know, a big part of me and that I'm proud of and that I'm using to make some money and make a career, which is really exciting. Yeah. So for so long, I didn't see anyone like me or with any sort of disability in the media. And I think that that would have made a real difference to me when I was younger. And I've been one of those people to help change that.
Let's talk about when you were younger. What was your childhood like for you?
It was a nice childhood in terms of my parents were very loving and encouraging, but it wasn't a nice childhood in terms of being lonely and isolated from people, being different. Kids don't want to play with, you know, people. They don't want to get to know people because they're often afraid of difference. The prejudices might come from their parents in a lot of cases. So, you know, it was a lonely childhood. But in terms of growing up with my parents, it was good. Never went without, and I was always encouraged to be creative and do things that I enjoyed. And you know, we always had holidays, and although I hated them, they were camping trips. But you know, we always had nice things to eat, and yeah. So I never went without, but I did feel like I went without friends. I guess now, you know, I'm surrounded by amazing people. And I look back on those days, and I wish that little me could have heard what big me has become.
Yeah. For sure. And so now you're out there doing that, right? Like you're out there.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about, like, help me understand, you know, your, well, I don't, see, this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm in this position where I feel, and I imagine that this is not uncommon for people, where I don't know the right terminology to use.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, so can we have a discussion about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So many people, and I talked to this about someone to someone yesterday, actually. I guess so many people dance around the terminology, and I guess for fear of getting it wrong.
Yeah.
But also for the stigma attached. So for a long time, I never identified with having a disability. I thought that it was what someone else, you know, with a more severe disability had, you know, because obviously disability is portrayed in a certain way in the media. either really a tragedy or something you overcome, or some, you know, like the super crypt kind of notion. And it wasn't until I started mentoring at the Children's Hospital for young people who had chronic illnesses that I identified with having a chronic illness. These people were all needing to take time off school and work and had all these different specialists, and I had these kind of societal barriers. And I realized, hey, I get that too. These things happen to me, and I've had this illness all my life. It's not going to go away. So I identified with that. And then when I started writing more about me and other disability issues, I realized, yes, I too have a disability, because according to the social model of disability, the disabling barriers are society. It's not so much the condition itself. So I realized that all these people that I were meeting, although we all have different types of impairments, we all experience similar kind of low expectations, you know, discrimination, things like that. I mean, and good stuff as well. I feel like I found my people through identifying as having a disability, that it's not something to be ashamed of. Last night we just performed in a show in Melbourne as part of Midsummer Festival called Quippings, and it's a bunch of us, about 10 of us, and we do spoken word and comedy and singing, and I sang, lip-synced and danced a bit last night. That stuff's really fun because we all get each other, we all listen to each other's stories, and we had a sold-out show, so that was pretty good. So in terms of disability, I guess the right terms of people with disability or disabled people, quite happy with that. Chronically ill people, person with chronic illness. There's other terms as well that identify as autistic, prefer to say autistic, not people with autism. But it's about reclaiming the word and not dancing around and not making out that disability is a bad thing. You know, so many people, you know, people with disability and parents as well, they say, oh, but I don't want to have that as my identity. And I guess that's their choice. But to me and to many others, disability is as much a part of identity as sexuality, as gender, as occupation, as interests. So, you know, I'm pretty proud. I identify as a proud disabled woman now. I think that so many people use the word special needs, and that's so our friend Stella Young, who passed away in 2014, often used to say special is just another word for shit. So, you know, when special needs are spoken about and I guess are catered to or for in society, it's often people aren't integrated into the mainstream. You know, they're on a special bus at a special school and they don't get many mainstream opportunities. And I know that people who went to these so-called special schools might not have got the education that they deserved or were capable of, because there's that low expectation. So disability and disabled all the way.
Yeah, cool. And so yeah. What do you... Talk to me about your condition too. I'd love to understand a bit more about that.
Yeah. Okay. So it's ichthyosis, and it's a Greek word, I think, deriving from fish. It means fish. I don't know.
Something
about fish and scaly. And,
yeah.
So I was born with it, and my parents don't have it. So they had no idea about this condition until I was born. And that happens to a lot of parents. Like, you know, it just happens. And so they have the gene, but they don't have the condition. So the gene's recessive. There are 24 different types, or at least 24 different types of ichthyosis, ranging from mild. So there's a lot of people that are quite, you know, white or black, and their skin doesn't look any different apart from their scales. And then there's people like me where their skin is red. I'm on the severe end. There's another condition called harlequin ichthyosis, which is, I know there is another condition called harlequin ichthyosis, but that one is more severe than mine, and babies that are born are often given a bad prognosis. So often, I mean, not so much now because there is so much technology and different people around to talk to as well to save lives. But I think the oldest person with this harlequin ichthyosis is just 30, but, you know, they didn't live much past childhood in the past. I think last week a little baby was born in India, and because of the stigma around disability and ichthyosis and facial difference, it's been reported that the mother didn't want to love it, didn't want anything to do with it. So there's still that stigma in different countries and rejection. But I think that, you know, in the Western world, certainly there's so much more technology and people to turn to as well. I know that my blog and other people's have been helping new patients and parents. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. So what does it mean for you day to day?
So my skin gets really sore a lot of the time. I can't explain pain. It's so weird to explain pain, you know.
Yeah, I know, it's
really weird. It's just like a thumping or a burning or, like, I don't know what sunburn feels like because I don't let myself get sunburned, but I guess it could feel like sunburn. It is itchy, really itchy. Like, I get a really itchy scalp a lot. Sometimes I have to scratch against, like, corners of furniture like a sheep, you know. My body doesn't regulate its temperature, so in summer it's really hard to cool down, but mostly I'm always cold. So last night in Melbourne it was quite cold and I said to my husband, I'm really cold, can we have the heater on? He said no. So I mean, normally he gives in, but it is the middle of summer, so
but it is Melbourne too.
I know, but it was like 38 the other day. So, but he went to work this morning and I put the heater on when he left. He doesn't know that. So I get itchy. I have problems with my eyes, just like getting dry and sensitive to light. When I was little, I used to have it's called a failure to thrive. So a lot of people with ichthyosis have a really high metabolism. So the amount of skin that you shed in 1 month is the amount of skin that we shed in 1 day.
Wow.
So we shed 1 month's skin in 1 day. So we're using a lot of energy to do that, to keep warm, to keep cool, you know, to build skin. And so when we're young, especially when we're young, have a high calorie intake, and I could, until I was about 30, I could eat and eat and eat and not put on weight. And now it's changed a bit, unfortunately.
And you're like, damn.
I'm just like everyone else in that respect now. But no, it's all right. We went overseas last year for a honeymoon, and I did feel heavier than usual before. It was like a bit of a stressful year last year, and I did feel a bit heavier. And we ate so much food, but we walked about 20 kilometres each day, and I came back thinner than when I started. So that was good.
That is good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it gets really sore to the point where I have to go to hospital with infections. So I went in hospital last year for a week, I think. But I have, for the past two, not this year, but for the past 2 years, I've been really sore, like in heaps of pain, more pain than ever. I don't know why. I think, and maybe because I got married, I went overseas, I had a really stressful job, all the like busy stuff. Maybe it was that. Like, I think stress definitely impacts on it. I had my wisdom teeth out last year, and I was meant to have it under, you know, when I was asleep, but it was so sore, and I went to this dentist and it was just awful, and I probably can't talk too much about it because I had to put in a complaint, APRA. It was that awful. And my skin got really bad as a shock after that, and then I ended up in hospital, and I reckon I was sore for a good like 6 weeks. Just the pain was terrible, and I have to go see a pain management specialist now because they were saying that the pain of the skin has gotten so, like I said, advanced, like it's been happening for, you know, all my life. It's to my nerves now, so that can be really hard. But fortunately, I haven't really been that sore since about maybe November last year, which is good. I cut my work hours back. Well, I haven't really, but I cut my day job hours back to 3 days a week. So I do freelancing for the other four, literally. And I haven't been as sore since I've been able to do my own hours, but mostly because I work from bed. but, you know, I think that the lack of commute might be helping. Not that it was even a long commute, but I don't know. It just seems a bit better.
Yeah, so what is your day job?
So I used to work for the government, but last year I took a big pay cut to do a part-time job so I could do more freelance. And it's just, I was so scared. I was just, you know, oh God, what am I going to do? Because I've been there, you know, in a secure, permanent, full-time job for so many years. And then I just wanted to do more writing and speaking, and it's just worked out so well. Like, I don't feel, you know, worried. I haven't had to ask my parents for money, which is good. Dad says, oh, you're
that's
not
always a good thing.
Yet.
I had to do that this week, and it was didn't go well. Let's just say that.
It's so hard, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I've had to do that in the past. But, you know, Adam kept on saying, my husband kept on saying, it'll be all right, it'll be all right. And, yeah, I've just had so many opportunities. So at the moment I work for a charity, a not-for-profit, People with Disability Australia, and we advocate for people with disabilities and educate that. So I do comms and social media. But in my other life, in my freelancing life, I write for the media, I speak. I'm developing a training program for a company at the moment, which is really good. Adam said to me, you should develop training programs for big business. And then the next day I get this email from this big business asking me to develop a training program.
That is so bizarre.
Wow. It's amazing. And then this year, like, the guy called me to tell me I'd won the tender. So it was amazing.
Amazing.
I know. So I met with them yesterday, and I'm going to be delivering like 2 programs per month to them, which is good, in Sydney. So that involves a bit of travel. And I'm doing some radio. I just got a spot on RN's Life Matters on ABC.
Oh, wow, that's great.
It's really good. I'm their modern dilemma expert, which is nice. So I had my first one last week. I think that's happening every month. I'm doing some TV. I think I can announce it. I just got an email on Monday with some pictures that I can promote. I'm going to be in ABC's You Can't Ask That, on which is happening in April, which is really exciting.
Wow, so shit's really happening for you.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm about to write a book as well. Yeah, it's really exciting. It's really good. I've been writing a lot for the media, so my blog's been a bit neglected. I kind of can't, like, I just prioritize that paid writing, and I want, like, there's so much stuff I want to write on my blog, but nothing's actually happening. Like, I work at home, I'm really boring, but then I just write, like, you know, commentate on the media or whatever for paid stuff. So yeah, it's been good.
Have you been doing, like, you mentioned at the beginning that you were a kid that probably didn't have that many friends and you're mm-hmm. really lonely, and now you're kind of surrounded by people and you're doing really, really meaningful work in the world. Was there a catalyst for a change in perspective for you, or
like,
what kind of was the catalyst for you to go from that lonely, isolated kind of person to mm-hmm. where you are now?
Yeah, so I guess, like, having not having friends, it doesn't give you practice in being a friend. So I felt like all of the friends that I did have, like the few friends, I might not have been a great friend, because I just don't, you know, you don't know how to be a friend if you don't have many, I guess. So I think when I started year 12, my mum said to me, I have to go get a part-time job, but it can't be to the end of year 12, but start applying like mid-year or whatever. So I did, and then I got a job the next week, like it came up, which was great. And I just made all these friends there, and I realized that, like, the world's pretty professional and people have to behave in a certain way, and like how they were behaving at Kmart wasn't how, like, I was treated at school. So I worked at Kmart for 4 years, which was great, and, you know, as a checkout chick. And in that time, it was so great, because not only did I develop friends, but learned how to deal with people, like, in a professional way that asked me about my skin. I mean, I most of the time I'm polite. If they're not polite to me, I'm sometimes not polite back, but most of the time I'll just provide a really standard response. So that Kmart experience really helped me develop confidence and friendships, and I'm, you know, still friends with those people today. And then I went to university and just, you know, got friends there. But again, I never identified as being sick or having, like, it was just like, this is how it is. And it wasn't until, you know, they say writing helps you know yourself, and I guess it wasn't until I started writing and getting that kind of support and realizing there were others out there like me that I, you know, identified. So it's that. But in terms of writing for the media, I just thought, well, I was doing my Masters of Communication and I needed to get, like, a portfolio. I didn't need to, but I thought it would be best to. So that's why I started writing this blog. I've been blogging for years, like since 2001.
Wow, that blog, is a long time.
I know. I don't have those blogs anymore, but I think I found some that were printed out and they're so bad. They were on, like, Diary Land, and they're about, you know, boys that I liked when I worked at Kmart and stuff like that, you know. So they weren't, you know, they weren't good. But the blog that I've got now, I really wanted to focus on, you know, developing a portfolio of stuff. And I think I submitted something I wrote to a government website, and then they picked it up, and I was writing for them for a while, and then that helped. That took me to write for Mamma Mia. And while I don't write for them anymore, I credit Mia and the team for giving me the break into freelancing, which is good. So I've been doing freelancing, like writing for the media, for about 6 years now. Yeah. This will be my 7th year, which is good. Yeah. So
the other thing I was that popped into my head was, mm-hmm. you know, when you were a kid, what did you envisage your future would be like?
I wanted to be a dermatologist, which is ridiculous because, like, I think you have to be really good at maths and science, and I wasn't. I mean, I was all right at biology, but I wasn't very good at maths. And I hate blood, and I hate, you know. And then I didn't realise just how much I would pick up infections if I worked in hospitals. So I was a bit shattered when my dermatologist then told me, like, people would be there to see me but weren't sure if they were seeing a doctor or a patient. So I'm like, oh, I can't be a dermatologist then. So then I wanted to be a journalist, and I just – I don't know, like I didn't think I could be, because when I grew up in a really small town near Albury, and they didn't and still don't have media courses there. So me going to university straight after school would have been me going away. And back then, I think, and I don't know if it's still the same, but my parents earned too much for me to get Aus study, and so they wouldn't be able to support me financially. And also they were really worried about me being sick and away from home. So they said, no, you'll have to stay locally. So I had to do this really boring course, which got me a job, but, you know, it wasn't what I wanted to do. And then 3 years, well, after I finished uni, the year after I finished uni, I moved to Melbourne and I got a job in Melbourne, or I had a job to move to, you know, to come to. And then after I did a graduate position with the government, and after that I think I took 1 year of not studying, and then I started studying my master's. It felt like I was studying for ages because I did my master's part-time.
Yeah, but a master's, like, that should take a long time.
Oh, no, it doesn't really. It should only take a year and a half full-time or three years part-time.
I don't know anyone who's it's taken that long.
I think I took 6 years because I just did, like, one subject a semester at times, and I had to look after my skin, and I was working full-time, so I did that. And, yeah, I remember I talked to my lecturer the other day because I want to do my PhD, and I was talking to her about it, and she said, oh, I used to think you're here for a long time, Carly. Why aren't you ever leaving university? So I reckon I did it from 2005 to 2012, but I had a bit of a break in between or something. But I just, you know, it's just like one or two subjects a semester, and yeah, it was good. So I did that. I did a master's in communication. So I did do journalism after all that, but yeah, then I didn't want to become a working journalist.
Some ways you kind of are in a roundabout way now.
Yeah, it's really good. It feels weird though, because so many times I get asked to comment on things, and being a media commentator, I guess, is different to a journalist because you're just writing opinion pieces, and I don't want to bring the tone down, but sometimes, you know, and you'd know this, the more you put yourself out there, the more kind of trolling you get. And I had a person write and complain about an article I'd written last week saying that she's unhappy that I didn't interview the people that I was writing about. Like, I had to review a TV show and write about it. But my editor didn't want that. It was an editorial, it was an opinion piece. I wasn't asked to interview them. I guess I could have if I wanted to. But there's that kind of expectation that as a person in the media, you'll do something a certain way, whereas I didn't need to interview the subjects on the show. And then when I wrote my follow-up piece, I thought, oh, gosh, should I interview them? And I didn't have to in the end, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does it does open you up to, yeah, criticism and more judgment than probably you would get when you're safely just sitting at home.
I know. I've got a pretty thick skin, but it can be annoying. One of the trolls was I called out some awful behaviour that happened to a friend, and one of my regular trolls then went and trolled my friend, and I thought, oh, how shit. Like, your life must be really sad to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Like, there are a lot of people out there in a lot of emotional pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the way that they feel. They get some control back in their lives.
Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know, it's pretty awful. I don't receive it that much. Like, I have really good support around me. Like, I'm friends with people that are on the receiving end of this awful behaviour. And, you know, sometimes I'll send a message to Clem Ford or Van Batten going, hey, what do I do? Or they'll check in to see if I'm all right. So that's nice. But it is hard. And so recently my cleaner, so I had a cleaning agency, so I would get a cleaner on rotation. I guess I didn't know who they were because I used to work away from home, but now I work from home, I see them. And someone came and they were scared of my face, and they showed it, like they got a fright and they showed it visibly. So anyway,
how do you deal with that?
So I went out into the kitchen to say, hi, I'm Carly, blah, blah, I'm going to go soon. And then I decided not to go. I wanted to do some more work. And then I just said, hey, I'm not going to go in the end. And she got a fright again. And I said, look, my face is from a skin condition. You don't have to be scared of it. You know, you're just here to clean my house. I said, it's not contagious. Don't worry. So then she just left. I was in my room working, and I thought, maybe I don't hear any cleaning happening. I don't smell any cleaning products. And then she just left. So I called the agency, and they said that she didn't know how to react to my skin, so she just left. I'm like, well, this isn't good enough. So the person from the agency came to clean, and that was fine. But then the next time they were due to clean, no one came. And then they chose not to clean my house anymore because they said that I called it discrimination, and they don't think it was discrimination. The Human Rights Commission say otherwise. So I was left without a cleaner, and I finally found a cleaner, and that's fine. But Clem Ford, I love her so much, and she put this call out for a cleaner for me on her page, and she's got like 140,000 Facebook fans or whatever. So for me to find a cleaner amongst all those comments, I had to see like comments like clean your own house, like you're lazy, all these kind of feminist comments around me using someone to clean my house when it's slavery and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, oh, God. So there's that kind of like incidental.
Yeah. That just seems so ridiculous though, right? Like,
I know.
You're paying someone to come and clean your house. Like, that's actually empowering.
Yeah, I know. And that's their choice. Like, they're choosing that career. So anyway, I found the cleaner and I think she's okay. So she's been here once. So that's all right. But, you know, so that kind of stuff, it gets a bit tiring. And I was saying to someone like recently, talking about what happens, like talking about these microaggressions, these discrimination, and then having that reaction on social media can be as tiring as the event itself. People kind of diminish your experience. They'll say, oh, but they didn't mean it that way. Oh, I'm sure that you're overreacting, or don't you think that you're being a bit sensitive, or are you really sure? Like, what did you do to bring that on? So there's that. And last year I was like, I asked for a seat on the train because I was really sore, and this guy didn't give me one. And I said, this is an accessible seat. And then he kind of looked up and he didn't believe me. I said, look, it's fine. I'll just stand. And he got really angry at me. And he said, you know, you don't deserve a seat. You know, you're bringing my race into it. I said, I actually never mentioned your race until you mentioned your race. And then he said that if I'm so sore, I shouldn't be working. And it was just really awkward. And then no one said anything. I was just left to stand up. And no one got up. It was really awkward. And when I wrote about it, people were saying, oh, but maybe he had a bad back. And I said, well, actually he did. He told me that. At the end, I said, if he told me he had a bad back and he couldn't, like, give me a seat, that's fine. I would have said, hey, that's fine. But don't, like, abuse me and then tell me you've got a bad back, and don't use that as an excuse for being a dick, you know. So, but then when I wrote about it, people were saying, oh, but I understand he might have been, you know, apprehensive to give you a seat. He might have thought you're some bit. And I'm like, just don't diminish our experiences.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I wouldn't be asking for a seat if I didn't need it, and I wouldn't be complaining if this didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so that's just so interesting, because it brings up for me, I think about all the times that I do that, because I'm always trying to see something from everybody else's perspective in the situation that we're in. And it's not that I mean to diminish anyone's. It's like I'm looking to understand all angles. So
but that can just be, really feel like it diminishes. Like so many people with disabilities or even of different races and colours feel that. Like my friend, I was talking to her on radio recently, and she was saying that she was abused on Australia Day. She's black and she was walking with her son, and some guy just gave her the finger. And then she was talking to her friend about it, and then her friend says, but what did you do to provoke that? And she's like, I was just walking with my son. I'm a black woman, of course. You know, that's just going to provoke it. It's just so bad. So there's that kind of like the looking for, you know, that playing devil's advocate, or looking for, like, to the person on the receiving end, that it's not empowering or comfortable or even believing us, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Because at the end of the day, we haven't walked in somebody else's shoes, you know. Yeah, that is a really great insight. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. But it is, you know, sometimes people say, oh, but you should have used that as an educative experience or whatever. And I just said, you know, not everything's an educative experience. I just want to get on with my day.
It's actually not your responsibility either a lot of the time to educate people how to behave, you know, or what, or what they, and that would be an exhausting way to live, to have to explain yourself in every single thing that you do.
I know. I find it really hard to know when to educate kids. So if their parents are with them or whatever. And last year I wrote about an experience where I was at cinema in the queue, and this kid was staring at me, and I was just smiling, like his mother and his sibling was with him, and I just smiled and I said hello, and I went up ages. The queue was long. He was like, then got his brother, and he kept on like pulling his brother, pointing at me, sticking out his tongue, and I said, excuse me, you're being quite rude. And this went on for, like, his mother didn't see that he was staring at me. And his mother turned around and told me that I was being rude. And I just said, you know, your child was pointing. I've done my best to placate him by making, like, smiling and saying hello or whatever. And it's not my job to step in and say not to stare or whatever. And she said, oh, but he's only a little kid. And I said, well, then you can start talking to him about difference. And then when I wrote about that, I think we got republished on KidSpot, and wow, the comments.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Yeah. I'm just marvelling that we haven't got each other's names, like tumbled over each other's names.
I know. It's weird. Carly with a K, Carly with a C.
I find it really hard to write other people's names like that are Carly spelt in a different way to mine.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of used to it because mine is like not the traditional spelling.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like – yeah, so most people are Carly. Well, not most, because there's like, I mean, how many different variations are there?
I know, there's so many, and I don't like. I think mine's the right way.
yeah. I think yours is too, because I think I was named after. Well, there's an argument out on who I was named after. My dad says I was named after Carly Simon, which is spelt the same way as you.
Yeah.
My mum says I was named after when she was pregnant. She went to the doctors, and somebody had Carly on their Medicare form. And she was riding next to them. I don't know, she must have been in Medicare or something. And so she said, that's where my name comes from. It's very romantic. But but there's just so many different spellings now. And it gets very annoying.
A bit silly as well. Like, you know, a little bit silly with a H in a place that there shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, my last name, Nimmo. Like when I ring and I have to spell that out, it's like, N-I-M-M-O, and they're like M-I-M-M-O.
Oh, yeah, they don't know the M's and the M's, I know.
And I'm a voiceover artist. I pronounce pretty well. It's N-I-M-M-O.
Yeah, it's really frustrating when you have to spell your name like 7 times.
Yeah, but like even more frustrating for, like, I'm just thinking about that. Like, that's not even annoying. But when you're constantly getting asked about the way you look, that must be annoying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think people have to realise if they're asking, like, why someone looks the way they do, chances are 5 other people have that day, you know.
Yeah.
And to be told that you have done a certain thing that you haven't, like, I get told off in the summer particularly for being in the sun, like, forget it, for being stupid and being in the sun, no matter how covered up I am, or, like, even indoors. I went to the cinema once and there's this woman who just came and yelled at me. I was in, but so it was so hot, it's like 45 degrees or something, and so I went to see 2 movies in one day, and I had a break between, and I was cold because I went to the cinema. So I was sitting in the sunny bit of the, like, the shopping center, which is, you know, an open, not an open roof, but a glass roof. And so I'm warming myself up there between movies, and then this lady comes and yells at me to tell me how stupid I am for being in the sun. And I was covered up from, like, I may as well have been wearing a mask. I was that covered up. Like, I had my hat on, my sunglasses, long everything's. And she just yelled at me for being in the sun. And she did not listen to me when I told her I haven't been. You can't reason with some people.
No.
And even, like, some people say I should have a card with information about my condition, but no, I have a card, like, with information about my blog, and sometimes I'll say you can go read more about that depending on how they are. But I've seen how people react to those cards, and genuinely the people that ask the rudest questions or are the rudest won't be, like, they'll just throw that card away.
And it's not, and it's not your job to change them. I mean, I think awareness and, you know, and having open, honest conversations definitely can change things. But some people aren't open to that either, you know.
No. And awareness is often at the expense or the benefit of the other person. It's not often at the benefit of us. Like, we're kind of, well, not me, but I see so much exploitation around that, like with pity porn, charity porn, you know, inspiration porn, not in the porn in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
That's what I have to write about this afternoon. About,
oh, really?
Inspiration porn, yeah. So about people that are, like, inspired by disabled people just going about their day. So Stella Young coined a term, inspiration porn, which means like the objectification of people with disability. And I think about it as well. I mean, it's not just about disability. It's about other things as well. You know, we say poor people and older and younger generations and doing things, and we're kind of inspired by that. And, you know, even I feel a bit guilty of that. I posted that thing about that guy who befriended his elderly neighbor the other day, you know, and he's brought her into his home. And I thought, well, am I just posting inspiration porn here, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting concept, isn't it? And also, we're none of us are without our own struggle.
Mm.
And, you know, and to, I don't know. Like you were talking before about diminishing. For us to go to inspiration porn, however it is yeah. also diminishing the fact that sometimes life sucks for us and yeah. all of us, even those yeah. who seemingly have a perfect life.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all struggling, and that's okay.
It's hard. Like we were talking, I was talking to someone the other day about Kurt Fernley, and he did a great podcast with Will Anderson about how, for him, he's doing the Kokoda Trail and he's this great athlete. So, yes, he's doing really inspiring things. But then there's people that are inspired by disabled people just for going to the shop, you know. And I feel like inspired by Kurt for doing all this great stuff because he's an athlete and he, you know, he's got such a great personality and he, you know, I'm inspired by that, but I'm not inspired because he's disabled.
Yeah.
And I hope that people aren't just inspired by me for getting on the train. Sometimes when I write things and I'm in the media, people will say, oh, I saw this lady on the train. She's such an inspiration. I'm like, but for what? Like, I'm just doing what you're doing. Like, just yeah. say the article's really good. You're inspiring for writing that article. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's so interesting because I'm just thinking about the things that people have said that the reasons that I inspire them. And a lot of it has had to do with the fact that, you know, I've been open about my depression and anxiety and yeah. I speak openly about that. And yeah. and I've yeah. had this $100,000 business failure and I've spoken openly about that. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. That's not it's inspiring. Hard, it's just it? Kind of my life.
Yeah. You know? I think sometimes people, they kind of make, and I know this, and I don't want to be so blunt. Well, I'm probably going to be blunt and I'm not being blunt that's to okay. you, but just in general, I think people kind of make themselves feel better by thinking other person's got a really shit life and look how shit mine could have been. You know, inspiration porn, as an example, is, you know, a picture of a kid that uses calipers and he's running and then there's a caption, what's your excuse?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, those one light, one prayer kind of posts on Facebook where two of my friends' photos have been used in those this week. You know, like this person's not getting any wishes for their birthday. Wish them a happy birthday. And they're actually leading a really great life. Their photo's just been stolen on Facebook and used for inspiration porn.
Yeah, that's really atrocious.
Yeah. I know. So, you know, there's that. And I think we have to, you know, everyone's got their own shit to deal with. Totally. And we have to think that stop having such low expectations of people with disabilities. So one of my friends has just got engaged and he asked me the other day, he goes, oh, I never knew, Carly, how bad it would be. Do people, like the kind of inspiration porn and the pity's already started? Like, and he asked me if that happened to me when I was engaged or even now. And sometimes people ask my mum if Adam has the same condition as me or like I've been told that I'm a burden on him or he's doing a really great thing for being with me. But, you know, there's that kind of really low expectation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that note, like, because you mm-hmm. are, you recently got married. Mm, so how did yep. you meet him?
Oh, I met him on OkCupid. Oh, I'd done internet dating for years and yeah. I hated it. It was so bad. And it was in 2013. I was getting this really good place of just freelancing. I just really started off. I was writing regularly for daily life and other places. And I thought, I don't have time for a boyfriend. So I was on this site and I had met a couple of people that I sort of stayed friends with, but nothing had happened. And I wouldn't look for people. He just messaged me or they just messaged me. And he wrote to me and I guess in hindsight, and I've written about this as well, I am, you know, a writer, so I'm a bit of a word snob. And I thought, oh, I don't think this is going to work out because he's just not, like his spelling just isn't up to my standard. So, and that's really awful of me. And I guess, you know, so we first sort of wrote to each other and I told him about my skin. I had a photo of me on there anyway. And he kind of, and, you know, you were talking about not knowing how to address things, like dancing around, like terminology and that. So he was very well-intentioned, but because I'm all, like, assertive and proud and bossy or whatever, and I'm like, oh, you're just not really getting it right. So I wrote this piece about him on my blog about how I don't want to be someone's object of pity because he's kind of like, oh, you're really pretty even though, or I can't even remember the words, but whatever, it was a bit cringeworthy. And I sort of didn't give him the chance that I should have because I expected more, I guess, you know, and that's wrong of me. I can't expect everyone to be up to scratch around disability. Anyway, so he read that And then he still wanted to meet me. I'm like, geez. Like, really? Like, I haven't, like, devastated him.
He's a glutton for punishment.
I know. So we met, and I'm pretty outgoing. I'm pretty talkative. And he's so, like, he's so shy and he's so not talkative. And the other night I was asking him, I go, did you, like, have a picture of me on your phone so you'd know? And he said, yeah, I knew. Like, I had to have a picture so I'd know when you were coming. And then when we met, he was wearing shorts. Like, no, I know now. Like, he would have worn shorts to the wedding if he could have. Yeah. So he was wearing shorts. And I'm like, what kind of guy wears shorts on their date? So I thought the waiter at the restaurant was him. So I got talking to him because I'm like, oh, this guy wouldn't turn up in shorts. So I thought it was him. And then he kind of like waves from over there going, I'm here. So we went on this date and we didn't talk. Like, he just, because he's so shy, he couldn't, you know, make a, you know, good conversation. And I'm just getting a bit frustrated because it's hard when someone doesn't talk. You're like making all the conversation. Yeah. So the date went for really quick, like 53 minutes or something. I remember seeing the bill and seeing what time it was, and like it was 53 minutes. And then he goes, oh, I'll drive you home. I said, no, that's fine. I'm going to go. And I didn't think it was going to work out. And then we went out the next week. And again, like, he just didn't. It was a bit better, but we went to the movies. He fell asleep in this girl. And now I also know he falls asleep in the movies. And then we went out again, and it just, like, he's just so shy. He wasn't showing me any interest, but he was showing me interest online. I can't, because I had so many relationships online where I met people online and really invested in that, and they hadn't ended up well because it's always unequal. Like, you always like them more than they like you or whatever. And so I thought, nah, I just need, like, I'm getting to this stage, I'm really confident and things are happening. I don't want it to be hard, and I feel like it's going to be hard. So then we were meant to go out for what, and he always reminds me of this, we were meant to go out the week after, and he was going to, like, pick me up and drive me, go to dinner and then drive me to this party and then wait around and not even expect to come home with me but drive me home as well. And it was like really far away from town, and I rang him and I said, it's not going to work out. And he was a bit devastated. So anyway, I thought, it's just not going to work out. And I said to him, you know, you're a nice guy, I hope, you know, hope you find someone, but I don't think it's for us. And the next day after the party, I woke up and I was a bit hungover, I guess, and I texted him and I said, oh, you know, I'm really sorry things didn't work out. I hope you find someone. And he goes, can you give me another chance? I'm like, oh, another chance? And so I didn't know what to do. And then I like a friend said, oh, you know, if it's hard work, it might not be worth pursuing if a relationship's hard. And I thought, you know, I may as well give him another chance. And he was a really nice guy. He's just really shy, and we're so different, I guess. And so this sounds really mean of me, but I did it with the best intentions for him, and I think it helped. I gave him some, like, prompting things for dates, like, I googled what to talk about on dates, and I gave him them, and then he came, and he just had a different kind of outlook. I don't know, like, it was just different, and he made conversation, and we really got along well, and we chatted, and we went to this African restaurant, and we you have to eat with your hands, so that's a good conversation piece. And the guy was really friendly, and like the guy there was really friendly to us, and then it just was on from then. Like, he was just really, really lovely, and we've been together. This is since 2013, so since November 2013, and we got married in March last year in 2016. So, but he always talks about the date that I dumped him on. Like, he'll always remind me about that. And so, yeah, I mean, we are really different. He's really shy, but he's just come such a long way with disability stuff as well. Like, now he works in the disability field, kind of. Like, he makes repairs things, like, for access things, beds and ramps and stuff. Yeah, so he works in a warehouse repairing stuff there. He comes to all the shows that I do, and I mean, I don't think he reads everything that I write, and that's okay, but he gets it now. We're looking at building a house, and he says, you know, the house has to have a ramp. We have to have, like, accessible floors, and, like, that's the first thing he talks about. So he's really wonderful, and his confidence is just sawn, you know. Is that a word? Sawn?
Yeah.
Sawed? Well, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, he's confident. I get what you're saying. Just, you know, he's just amazing. Like, he's just a different person. And I don't want to say it's all my doing, but I think just being with someone that has encouraged him so much now, he's, you know, he's developed his own business, which is great. So he now works a full-time job and he's a handyman on the side. And I never see him because he's always handymanning, like a handyman widow. But I've got heaps of writing to do this weekend, and he said he's out all weekend, so I'm like, good, I've got to write. He can be out doing your drilling and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what do you think the future looks like for you?
I'm going to write this book this year. So I've signed up with an agent, which is exciting. Had some publisher interest, which is exciting.
Is it like a memoir? Is that what you're...
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, yeah. So I guess I'm inspired by Lindy West and Clem Ford's books. I'm going to do some, like, more of my freelancing. I'm on a year's contract with my work, so I don't know whether I'll go back to the government or not. So I'm going to make the most of this kind of 3-day-a-week thing and doing my own thing the rest of the time. Yeah, and I think hopefully we'll build a house maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I just want to keep doing stuff and, you know, keep doing some more TV, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch. Biggest fear.
And I know I shouldn't decide, like, think about what other people think, but it is about, like, disappointing people, I guess. Being in the writing, the work that I do around appearance diversity and talking about disability and no bullying, you really have to be consistent in your doing. So, you know, and I think, you know, I probably have made mistakes, but it's really hard to discuss kind of frivolous issues without then body shaming someone or even calling out bullying without encouraging a pylon. And I don't want to disappoint people. And I find that really hard. Like, sometimes I'll be at work and I would have posted something. So the other week, Meryl Streep said this great thing at the Oscars or whatever the awards were, and it was around disability. And I really liked her speech, but I also think we have to listen to what the disabled community was talking about and saying, you know, we need more than just her speech. We need better healthcare, better access to healthcare in America. Donald Trump needs to not scrap all the disability policies that he's doing, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I posted a whole heap of stuff from different writers, which are really great, like all these opinions to say, hey, Meryl Streep was great, but these opinions should also be considered. And then at work, when I was at work, I just saw my phone light up with all the, like, a massive argument from people that saying, you know, this is wrong and they find it too hard to engage with disabled people when there's all these opinions and when we're so angry and opinionated all the time, blah, blah, blah. And then I kind of feel like I have to go in and moderate and justify and then kind of placate people and almost apologize without being apologetic. And I guess being in the public eye, I don't, like, there's that. I relate to that too. People, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because even when I'm writing, often I'm thinking about the impact and how it will be perceived on the other end rather than what I just want to say.
Yeah, yeah. So when I've been writing this book, like, I've been doing my book proposal, I've been doing one of the chapters is around media representation. And my opinions are all, like, they're out there anyway. Like, I hate it when people put their kids in the spotlight, and, like, I've written a lot about that. And I've also written about how when you go on a show like Embarrassing Bodies, you are then perpetuating that media and that stigma and everything. But I also have friends that have put their children in this spotlight. And while they know my opinion online, when it's in a book, it's a bit different, I think. So I'm almost a bit worried. I've been thinking about how I might have to talk to them about what I'm going to write. And I'm not going to apologize, but I want to preface it with, I'm going to write this thing and it might not be easy for you to read.
Yeah. So don't read
it.
Or do, but just deal with it. Deal with your own feelings.
Yeah. But I mean, sometimes through being assertive around these disability things, I've lost friends and it's been hard, you know. When I call out people's use of the R word, you know, retard, which isn't a great word to use, and derivatives of that as well with the FT word, people have told me to shut up and that, you know, my opinion doesn't matter and that it's okay for them to use it because language has evolved, and then they just unfriend me and just think, well, if we can't have a disagreement about that, or you can't take on my knowledge and lived experience, then that's disappointing.
Yeah.
So and I guess that.
Yeah. So what do you struggle with at the moment?
Time. And I thought I'd have more time since I've been freelancing. And like the other night, I do my day job 3 days a week. So I did that from 8:30 till 4. And then I had to do some, so I host a podcast as well. So I was doing some podcast stuff in the afternoon, and then I cooked dinner, and then I had a shower, and then I was writing this article for the rest of the night, and I finished at 9 o'clock. So I worked from 8:30 till 9 o'clock with maybe a 2.5 hour break, you know, and it's a big lot of time. So I want to do so much stuff and I don't have any time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about failure? What does failure mean to you?
I guess not, you know, again, the disappointment. It's not about not doing a good job, but maybe not doing a thorough job. I listened to this great podcast the other day about a woman who was a journalist, and she was a bit like, she thought she was pretty top shit, you know, when she was young, and she made a really big mistake, and then that came back to, didn't really haunt her, but I guess to her the mistake was bigger than it really was. So I guess, you know, being really mindful of once you write something, especially when it's in print. Online's not so bad because they can go back and, you know, but there's that. I want to get things right. I want to do a good job. I guess like a bit like you, when I was younger, I had, you know, money issues. So I've overcome them, which is really good. And, you know, saved enough money to go on 3 holidays in 6 years, which has been really, less than 6 years. So 2012, 14 and 16 of my holidays that I went on. Before that, like, I was really hopeless with money, and then I could overcome that. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess just, I know, like, everything I write and my experiences are truthful, but there's that kind of feeling that one day you'll be caught out, like, you know, the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Totally. It's really weird.
Totally. And because we also change and grow, right? And our opinion changes and grows.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And I think sometimes we can be held in a space that we no longer are by other people due to something that we've said in the past or that we've written.
I was listening to Lena Dunham talk yesterday on a podcast about, and, you know, she cops it all the time, and I just wouldn't want to be in that kind of media personality space or whatever you'd call it. And she said that often when you make a mistake, you know, in private, there's room to grow, but if you do it online and there's just no, it just becomes this viral sensation and there's no room to sort of redeem yourself or to learn, like you're just expected to redeem yourself straight away. I guess that hasn't really happened to me yet, touch wood, and it might happen one day, I don't know, but I don't know, it's just a weird thing, like the online space when you write and
Yeah, and I think often we take those mistakes or those errors in judgment or whatever they are way more personally and severely than you know, it's just a fleeting moment a lot of the time for everybody else.
Or for everyone, yeah.
Yeah, and
but
it's
then
not for us.
You look at how that woman, like, she tweeted a joke or something about catching AIDS in South Africa. Do you remember her? Oh, and no. she tweeted a joke, and then she got on a plane, and she was like a, you know, relatively unknown, but she was a journalist or something, or a PR person or something. And then by the time her plane reached South Africa, like, her phone was exploding with tweets and messages and stuff, and she'd gone viral, and then that just damaged her career. So that one little moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, we all have like a bit of an evil bitch in our head a lot of the time telling us a bunch of untruths. What is your record?
I think it's just some, like, I just applied for something before, and like being a fellowship or whatever it was. And I wrote that sometimes I'm almost too paralyzed to write thinking what people might think, you know, and I want to kind of stop that. Like, I want to, you know, I guess, you know, I think we're all procrastinators as creatives, but, and it's not even about being procrastinating. It's about almost being too scared for the outcome.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I totally get that. I can't tell you how many, you know, like, I'm not one of those people who publishes and deletes, you know, like, I had a lot of friends a few years ago that would write something and then 2 days later it's disappeared because, you know, they've made their own error in judgment or whatever, and they've felt it's not, I can't really explain why they've taken it off, but they have. But for me, I'm one of those people who writes this big long post and then goes, oh, fuck it. I can't be bothered. And then I just delete it. And that's mainly fear, right? Because it's like,
yeah,
I'm thinking about how I'm going to be perceived.
Yeah, I know. I don't know whether you saw last week, I wrote that really long post about the issue with the casting director, which I'm not meant to talk about or whatever, through to his threat. And, you know, that was received really well. And I guess, you know, when I have really good friends kind of almost like pulling me up, not in like in a good way, in a caring way, to say, hey, you probably could have prevented that from happening by not even talking about it, you know, and I just think, well, maybe I could have, but it's really hard.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's a very hard balance. And so a couple of more positive questions.
Yes.
What does success mean to you?
I think it's just knowing that I can achieve what I set my mind to. You know, like I was thinking before, like I wanted to be a journalist, and I am, I guess. I kind of think, what next? And it's this, like when I have to write this book, it's about, you know, being a leader, being a bit of an authority on a topic, I guess. But it's also including people and giving opportunities to other people. Sometimes I get too busy and I can't do something, so I'll say, hey, this person might be more suitable or more available than I am. So it's that, and, you know, being called on to offer opinion or offer advice or mentorship. So
yeah, cool. Yeah. And freedom, what does that mean to you? How does it look and
well,
feel?
I thought that going part-time would be more free, and it is. It's great. Like I was thinking today, oh, I could go to the movies, but I've actually got no freedom because I have two deadlines.
Yeah.
but, you know, there's that. I think it is maybe the ability to have an opinion and to have a voice in the mainstream media, because there's so many people that don't, and I think the low expectation around disability, around facial difference, and that really prevents people from having our own voice, being on shows other than Embarrassing Bodies. You know, I was thinking, I don't now write for much else that isn't mainstream media. I sometimes write for disability specific things, but now it's mostly writing for the mainstream media, which is great to have a voice that is heard and valued.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
So I've just changed over to carlyfinlay.com.au because I used to have a blog for like 7 years and I just made it a .com.au now. So that's me, Carly, Carly Findlay, Findlay, and I am also Carly Findlay on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram. I have a podcast called Refreshments Provided. Me and Jason, we just talk silliness. We talk about food. Last episode, we talked about how he's scared of mannequins and how I went to the sexual deviance ball when I was at uni. So we talk about silly stuff, you know. It's fun. We don't really talk about activism, which is good. And so, yeah, that's a fortnightly podcast. So you can find that at refreshmentsprovided.com.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
I guess if people want a voice, just start by creating their own media. If you feel like you want to be heard or you're in the minority group that's not heard, you know, write a blog, do a podcast, do a vlog on YouTube or however it's done now, you know, make Facebook videos, put your voice out there and get yourself known, because you can make a difference in that way. You don't have to be writing for mainstream media, but you can get noticed through your own social media. And also, I say this everywhere, sorry, you know, make sure if you're doing that, you've got someone in your life that understands the impact of the hard times. So not just your mum saying you're doing a great job, but have like someone to call on when it gets hard.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And, you know, it is scary because, I mean, we've talked about that a lot today, right? Like there can be ramifications for the things that we say and the things that we do, but it is also worth it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I never would have thought that I could be writing now for SBS and ABC after, you know, just a little blog. Well, that blog that I started in 2001 on Diaryland. Who would have thought?
Amazing. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Carly.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.